The following programming is sponsored by Pete Trabuco. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
And hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of Live on Tape with Pete Trabuco on WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio. And, of course, that's a Beasley Media Group station on beautiful Saturday afternoon here in beautiful the city of brotherly love. I'm here with Josh Applebaum. Josh is my producer for today, and we do really appreciate Josh being here, stepping in for Tyler Conklin. And just an amazing day we're having today in beautiful Philadelphia on a Saturday afternoon. I just want to let you know that I'm just so happy to be here, and I'm so happy to have the guest that we have here today. Just an amazing, amazing individual. Recording artist. He's a songwriter, music executive. You know him as Tony Orlando. Yes, the one and only Tony Orlando. Amazing person. I grew up listening to his music. He's worked with so many different people, so many different artists in songwriting, as an executive, producing, has done all the different things. And like I said, we're just so proud to have in the studio today, Tony Orlando. Tony, how are you today, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Listen, you just have had an amazing career, and you continue to have amazing career. You've been around, oh my goodness, since the 70s, if I'm not mistaken, and have done just so many fantastic things. I'm looking at...
Well, actually, the first... Forgive me for interrupting you, but I got to share. I've probably been in this business before you were born, because my first hit record came in 1961.
Wow.
And it was written by Carole King. That was her first hit record as well. And I was only 16 years old.
Okay.
So, and Carole was 18. It was called Halfway to Paradise. As a matter of fact, it started and broke right there in Philadelphia, because March 21st, 1961, we debuted that on American Bandstand with Dick Clark right out of Philadelphia. So my career started March 21st, 1961, because we started in Philly. And as, the great thing about that is that Dick Clark, came when I got the star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame many years later. He was right there to share it with me. So it started with him in 61. I was only 16 years old. So that's 64 years ago.
Oh, wow. That's absolutely amazing. I didn't even know it went back that far. But I do know that it was producer Don Kirshner who, I guess, hired you to write songs and at the Brill Building, which is obviously... iconic.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing about the Brill Building.
Yes.
Brill Building became the building most talked about of those songs, but we were never in the Brill Building. The Brill Building was a definitely an iconic music building, but it was mainly held the songwriters of the 20s and 30s and 40s.
Okay.
Right across the street, there was a building just entitled by its address, 1650 Broadway. Right across the street, which that building that held James Taylor, myself, Carole King, Neil Sedaka, Neil Diamond, and it always has been kind of confused. But just to set the record straight, that poor building never got it to do. So 1650 Broadway, if you're ever in New York on 51st Street between 7th Avenue and Broadway, is the building that most people think is the Brill Building.
That's right. That's right. I actually was there a couple of weeks ago, and I was looking at it. It was just still there. It's still existing. And I know you, Carole King, Neil Sedaka, Barry Mann, Bobby Darin, Connie Francis, they all right. worked out of that building, or basically worked out of that New York City area. And you were one of those individuals.
Yeah, we were on the sixth floor. It was really amazing when I think back. There was even a couple of kids that were working in that building that didn't have a hit record. Carole did, I did.
Yeah.
Bobby Darin did. But two kids called Tom and Jerry, unfortunately, they didn't make it until they changed their name.
Simon and Garfunkel, right? Yeah, that's what I thought. It's amazing that you lived through the best times of music. I mean, I think was it Neil Diamond actually was in the Brill Building for a while or in that area writing songs as well. So it must have been amazing being in the company of so many, just superstars. I mean, it must have been amazing.
All kids, you know, yeah. We were all kids with a dream, you know, really. When I think back of that office and I think that I could hear Carol writing, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?
Yeah.
And when I could listen to Neil Sedaka writing, Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, when I could listen to Neil Diamond writing next door. There were little cubicles, literally just with a piano and a guitar, in Don Kirshner's office on the sixth floor of that 1650 Broadway building.
Uh-huh.
When I think back to the music, remember, 61 was only 6 years after Elvis Presley Heartbreak Hotel, and 2 years before the Beatles.
Yeah.
So it was really a very important bridge between the late 50s doo-wop era and then what finally became the Beatles era in 63.
Yeah. It's just amazing. The stories that you could tell. I don't think we have enough time to hear all the stories, all the people that you have met. But people probably don't know that you started out on the other side of the industry. You were executive, vice president of a large publishing company, and you were involved with artists like the Yardbirds, James Taylor, Grateful Dead, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Barry Manilow, and, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on. So a lot of people didn't know that you were an executive on one side, and then you ended up doing, Candida, which started everything. Tell us about how that happened.
Well, right after that period of time, early 60s, 61, 62, there were two hit records. There was one called Halfway to Paradise that Carol wrote.
Uh-huh.
And then there was one called Bless You that Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil wrote. And that was their first hit as songwriters as well.
Uh-huh.
But come 63, something called the British Invasion occurred.
Oh, yeah.
And the Beatles came in and the Rolling Stones, and radio was not playing too many American acts, only Motown. And so those of us who were having hits in the early 60s, Brian Hyland, Gene Pitney, myself, Paul Anka, we were having troubles getting the radio play. So I found that myself in a position that I had to make a living. And I ended up working for Clive Davis at CBS, and he kindly put me in a position of general manager of CBS Music. And then finally, I ended up working my way up to vice president of CBS Music, and I signed Barry Manilow and Randy Edelman, by the way, who uh-huh. you mentioned earlier. I signed him out of Cincinnati. He was going to college, and he sent me a demo of his work, and I signed him, and very proud of signing those two artists, as well as being able to work with them and Barry and produce Barry Manilow's first record. So it was a good run for me. As you say, I represented James Taylor's music as a publisher, and Laura Nero, she was a genius, and Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and Grateful Dead. So it was a great learning curve for me, and I served under Clive for 5 years until Candida.
Really? So when did you know that you wanted to get into the music industry? I'm going to take you back even before the 60s. When did you know that you wanted to get into the music industry?
Oh, God, I've always known. I saw a movie called Singing in the Rain with Gene Kelly when I was 9 years old, and that was it. I was starstruck, and I saw this guy, and I got a chance to meet and honor him at the Friars Club, and I walked up, and I said, you know, Mr. Kelly, I was the only kid in the neighborhood. I was born and raised in Chelsea in New York on 21st Street. I said I was the only kid in the neighborhood that always had one wet left foot, because every time it rained, I would hit the puddles that were above next to the sidewalk and start singing in the rain and turn myself around the lamppost like you did. So imagine, I even had the unbelievable magical moment to speak to the guy who really was the light bulb to my career.
Wow. So tell me, every once in a while, my mouth goes down and I can't believe that I'm talking with individuals. What was it like to be in the same room talking with Gene Kelly? What was that like?
Well, oddly enough, listen to this. It was an amazing day, because I was at the Friars Club honoring Gene Kelly, And on the dais, the master of ceremonies was Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
So I was sitting behind Frank Sinatra on a dais that was just star-studded, honoring Gene Kelly. And I remember saying to Mr. Sinatra, I said, he put me right behind him. So it was a double dais. So to the view of the audience, you were looking at Sinatra, and anything that was behind him, you could see, and I was directly behind him.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said to him, I said, you know, I said, thank you, but why did you put me in this position, Mr. Sinatra? He said, well, Tony, let me ask you a question. Where are everybody's eyes? I said, on you, sir. Okay. And who is sitting directly behind me? I said, I am, sir. Are you in full view of the audience? I am, sir. Who is the new kid on the block in show business? I said, I am, sir. He said, well, welcome to show business. That's how we treat the new kid on the block.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I'll tell you, that must have been a shock to actually be able to meet. And I'm sure you've met a lot of individuals, including yourself. Obviously, you're a superstar. You've got a star on the walk, a walk of fame and everything. When did you know that you were going to make this changeover from being an executive to actually being a recording artist, a singer? When did that occur? I know it was Candida, but how did that occur? How did that happen?
Well, remember, as I said earlier, I had hits before I worked for Clive.
That's right.
So that was the original dream. And, you know, that was, you know, working in London and doing world tours and in early 60s as a soloist. But then when the British invasion came, as I told you, I went to work for Clive. I never thought I'd go back to singing. I thought I was going to stay behind the desk. I was really successful at it. And I was enjoying the role of being executive, especially under him. He was such an amazing talent, Clive was and still is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then a friend of mine, you remember the group The Tokens at all, Lion Sleeps Tonight?
Yes, I do. I know that well.
Okay, well, the producer and singer of that group, Hank Medris, he was one of The Tokens, came to me and said, would you do me a favor? I need to pay my rent. He said, I have a record here. Could you buy it from me? I said, well, I'm not a record company, Hank, but if it's a good one, I'll take it to a record company for you. How much do you want? He said, I need $3,000 to pay the recording costs and pay my bills. And he plays me the record, and it's Candida, the Candida that that sold 2 million records, but it didn't have my voice on it. So I liked the record, and I took it over to Bell Records, which was the final label for that for that record. And I said, Hank would like $3,000 for this, best if you like it. Larry Utah, the president of the company, said, I love this record, but I'm not crazy about the lead singer. Would you go back and put a different voice on this? So I go back and I say, Hank, he loves the record. You got your $3,000 if you put the right singer on. He says, you do it. I said, I can't do that. I work for Clive Davis. I can't do it. He said, Tony, please, I'm broke. Do me the favor. And you used to do all the demos for Carole King. This is that same kind of song, right? It's kind of a drifter's kind of a song. I said, yeah, it is. I said, I'll tell you what. If I cut this record in 1 hour, it's yours, but don't call it Tony Orlando. So I go in and I cut, and we cut Candida. Listen to this. One line at a time. So I would go, stars won't come out if they know the truth about what's the next line. And I did that for the entire song.
Wow.
Finished it in an hour, walked away, never thinking anything was going to happen. Prayed that he got his 3,000. He got his 3,000. 3 months later, it was a 2 million selling record. And all I can say is that I never thought that it would rekindle and restart the dream, which it did. Followed that up with Knocked Three Times, which sold 4 million records. Uh-huh. Still no one knew it was me, not even Clive. And I decided after 6 million records sold that maybe it was time to start the dream again. I went back to Clive and I said, Mr. Davis, I'm going to have to leave the company. He said, well, I know. Why? Because you're Dawn. You cut Candida Knocked Three Times. I said, well, you've known all this time. I said, it's the worst kept secret in the music business.
Oh, my goodness.
So I went out after that, came Yellow Ribbon. Then came the TV show on CBS, and the rest is I'm here with you.
That is such a fantastic story. That is a great story. For those of you just joining us, we are talking with recording artist, songwriter, music executive. He's done it all, Tony Orlando. And we'll be back with Tony right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
Crooked teeth may embarrass kids whose families can't afford braces. And trying to fix their teeth themselves can make things worse. Luckily, there's Donated Orthodontic Services, a program from the American Association of Orthodontists. For children and teens who qualify and are matched with a volunteer orthodontist, treatment can be life-changing and help them smile with confidence. Learn more at aaoinfo.org.
And welcome back to Live on Tape with Pete Tribuco on WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio with producer, of course, Josh over at Applebaum. We're just doing a great job. And I just wanted to let you know about a couple of things. Well, the first thing I want to do before we get to the guest is I want to introduce you to World Star Public Relations, where excellence meets exposure. Now, are you ready to elevate your brand to new heights? Well, their team of dynamic PR experts is here to make your story shine bright on the global stage. Whether you're a startup, an established artist, a business, or a rising star, they specialize in crafting narratives that captivate and campaigns that resonate. So that's World Star PR, your passport to the world of unparalleled visibility and success. Join the ranks of those who already have done so. Choose World Star Public Relations and let your story take center stage. You can reach them at 631-506-6600, 631-506-6600. And welcome, fellow Philadelphians. And we have got an amazing guest, recording artist, songwriter, music executive. He's pretty much done everything over the years, has met everyone. And I grew up, I was a teenager back in the 70s, and I listened to his music all the time. We have Tony Orlando with us today. Tony, how are you doing, sir?
Doing well. I'm enjoying my conversation with you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, listen, it's very rarely do I get real excited like this, but when I knew you were going to be on the show, I'm like, oh my goodness, I've had some big celebrities on, but I've always followed your music and always...
Well, you know, I know the feeling you have, because for the past 4 years, amongst all the blessings I've had, I have a radio show on WABC in New York, which, as you know, is an iconic radio station.
Absolutely.
And we're number one in the show, and we stream to 177 nations. Well, one thing I could share with your audience,
sure,
is that there is an art form to radio, which is what you do so well, that I never really realized until this last 4 years doing that radio show. And like you, you know, I've had on Lionel Richie and Garth Brooks and Adam Sandler and all these great people. And I've always been the guy who has been interviewed, but it is an art form to interview someone. I never realized how difficult your job is and how you make it seem so easy, because to ask the questions is different than having the ease of answering them. You have to be prepared. You have to be not so mundane and so like we've heard this one before kind of conversation. And an energy that you have, I've learned and keep learning how to have. So I compliment you, and I really respect the art of radio, which is something now after 64 years in this business is the newest part of my life. And I'm enjoying it. But boy, I tell you what, to your listeners, this man who is talking to me right now makes that art form very easy.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I do listen to your show, by the way. I live halfway between Philadelphia and New York, so I can pick up WABC. It's a great radio station, and you have a great...
And also, we live in a time where we stream. we don't even have to worry about a 50,000-watt station anymore.
This is true. You know, sitting here next to me as my producer, Josh, is his mouth is down. I mean, it's open. He's like, I can't believe we have you on. Josh, you had a question. Go ahead.
Actually, I had two questions. Given the age of streaming and social media we're in, what was the most memorable interview question you were ever asked? And second, what advice would you give, I would say, to people who are looking to pursue similar career paths that you have pursued over the years?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in terms, I'll answer the second question first. Pursuing a career was never other than just, I would have been happy pulling the curtain at a theater. My objective was just to be in show business, and not just in one aspect of show business. I wanted to be in all of it. I wanted to make movies. I wanted to make records. I wanted to do Broadway. I wanted to experience the whole thing. So really, and the bottom line was I would have been happy if none of those things happened to me. If I was the guy pulling the curtain on Broadway to a Broadway show or any show, I would have felt like I'm in a business that I wanted to be in. That was number one. It was never fame or money. It was just to be in a business that I had a love for. The second question is, I've never been asked the question ever that was the most difficult because I'm an open book. I don't duck questions. So therefore, there's never been any questions that ever stuck out as a great question, a difficult question. And that's the truth. Sometimes I would do shows and they say, do you not want to talk about it? I said, no, I have nothing to hide. Talk about anything you want. So there's never been a question that's ever like shocked me or even elated me. No, in a funny way, I've never been asked the question you just asked me. So I have to tell you that your question probably is the best one of all.
Thank you so much, Tony. I do appreciate that.
Well, you just made his day. That's fantastic. And I tell you, Josh is a heck of a guy, and we really appreciate him being here and working the board because I don't think I could possibly be able to do that. So, you know, we talked about your executive career, you know, with Clive Davis and also later on the early hits that you had. And, of course, going in as Dawn so that you can actually record eventually. And let's go to where we are now, or not now, but where we were in the 70s. It was, of course, Tony Orlando and Dawn. I think it was originally Dawn featuring Tony Orlando. And then later on, it became Tony Orlando and Dawn. Tell me about that experience, because you ended up picking up, I guess you had session singers in the beginning. And then, of course, Thelma Hopkins and Joyce Vincent Wilson. You know, Thelma being the actress, of course, we all know her. And, of course, Joyce Vincent Wilson, a great singer. You picked them up. How did that come about?
Well, both of them were pretty iconic background singers in Detroit.
Yes.
If you heard it through the grapevine with Marvin Gaye, that was also Marvin Gaye and Dawn, because that was Thelma and Joyce. If you heard Shaft by Isaac Hayes, that was also Thelma and Joyce. In fact, it was Thelma who said, shut your mouth to Isaac Hayes on Shaft, which is like kind of an iconic line. So they were already doing all of the Four Tops records, everything at Motown, and everything in Memphis as well. With Isaac and so forth. So when I was looking to form the group, remember I told you I was still working for Clive with Candida and Knock Three Times. Once I decided to go on the road, I had to form a group. So I thought, how am I going to, what would the group look like and what does the sound look like? Well, I was cutting Barry Manilow. I met Thelma because Thelma was part of a group called Hot Buttered Soul. They were at the Apollo Theater, and I had them singing background on Barry's records.
Sure.
So I see this beautiful girl, and I said, would you like to join me? I'm going to start the group called Dawn, but I want to start the group with real background singers and make them the group, and I'm opening up in London in 1 month. Would you like to go? And she accepted. She brought her cousin Joyce Vincent Wilson with her.
Okay.
And the rest was, that was the group, Tony Orlando and Dawn. Why did I pick them? Because they were the quickest learners. They were already background singers, and they couldn't wait to go to Europe.
And I'll tell you, they sound, you gel so well. I mean, on the music and everything. You guys got along extremely well. It seems like the chemistry was between you was great. And that showed later on during the Tony Orlando and Dawn show, which aired on CBS.
Answer your question, I didn't answer your question fully because it was a great question.
Sure.
You said it went from Dawn to featuring Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Yes.
The reason it became Tony Orlando and Dawn was because when we signed with CBS Television to go on a network show,
yeah,
Freddie Silverman, the head of all of CBS, he was the one that said, that's the name of the show, Tony Orlando and Dawn. Now, the funny thing about that was when the first show aired as a summer replacement show, I bump into a lady coming out of a delicatessen in L.A., and she looks at me, she goes, I love your show, but tell me, which one's Tony, which one's Orlando, and which one's Dawn?
That's funny. That's funny. It's amazing. It's amazing that you did that. And so tell me, the touring, how was that? I mean, your first year of touring, what was that like? It must have been so different than what you were used to, going around to all the different cities and being able to, to put all those songs together.
Well, the first tour we did was arena tours. That meant we were working Madison Square Garden and your wonderful arena there in Philadelphia.
Sure.
And we would, that was 20,000 seaters because the TV show, it's crazy when I think about it. The TV show had a viewing audience of 36 million people every Wednesday night because there was only three networks back then.
Yeah.
There was no internet. There was no cable. There was no direct TV. There was none of that. So three networks shared most of the viewing audience in America. So every Wednesday night for 4 years, we had an audience of anywhere from 35 to 40 million people watching us. It's astounding when you think of it, because that's like World Series numbers today. And maybe it's even less than that today, because there's so many venues you can go to and platforms. But anyway, we ended up going on an arena tour before arenas were even popular as acts would go. So it was the Stones that would play arenas. It would be us that play arenas. The Beatles would play arenas as they did. And they even played stadiums, Shea Stadium. But we were very lucky early on to have an audience that size.
And it was a big audience. For those of you just joining, we are talking with recording artist, singer, songwriter, music executive, known of many years, 60 years plus, Tony Orlando, and of course later on, Tony Orlando and Dawn. He's on with us right now. I just want to go to CBS and talk about the Tony. I watched that show. Okay. And yeah, back then we had 2, 4, 7, 9, and 11. Those were the channels. That was what we had.
That was it. You're right. And 11 was your local channel.
Exactly. So basically on CBS, 36 million people watching your show from 1974 to 1976. That's 3 years. I watched show.
No. I know that's in the Wikipedia thing on the information. It's really misinformed. We started in 73 as a summer replacement show. And here's the crazy part of that.
Sure.
So 73, in the summer of 73, was the Hudson Brothers in July, in June on CBS. Bobby Gentry in July and us in August. The one that got the biggest ratings then went on in January. So we went on January, started in 73 in the summer, then went on January of 74.
Okay.
And we didn't come off the air until 77.
Wow, that's even better. Wow, I did not know that. That is pretty cool. Well, listen, Tony, we got to take a break, but we're going to be back with Live on Tape right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. It's so easy to use also. Simply place the mask over face, push, and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit LifeVac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. LifeHack. That's 877-LIFEHACK.
It started with the original care package, helping survivors in the aftermath of World War II. And for almost 80 years, CARE has been delivering hope around the world in the form of supplies to those in crisis, combating climate change, and generating solutions to the world's biggest problems. Our story for a better world is only starting. Join us to secure a better future for her at care.org.
And welcome back to Live on Tape with Pete Chabuco and WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, the city of brotherly love. That is, of course, Philadelphia. Pete Chabuco here with, of course, Josh, our engineer. Fantastic. We are with recording artist and songwriter, singer-songwriter, music executive, has done pretty much everything, and a television personality also from the Tony Orlando and Dawn show from 1974 to 77 on the air. I'm looking here, and I'm seeing that you had some of in the beginning of the show, it was a variety show, it was really great, but you had Jerry Lewis and Jackie Gleason as some of the guests. What was it like to actually hang out with those fellas, huh?
Well, it's interesting because Jerry Lewis, I had he was my childhood idol.
Uh-huh.
And to be able to host a Jerry Lewis telethon with him and Sammy was for 33 years. So it was a close relationship. It was a friendship, more like a family. Although he was older than me, we were like brothers and we were very close. In fact, I had the honor, privilege, sadly to say it, I was the host of his funeral, his celebration of life for him and his family. And to think that I was able to do that with someone I grew up with. I remember the first time I ever met Jerry, he was in New York City. He was doing a telethon in the 50s and I was just a little kid, maybe 10, 11 years old. And I walked up and I had a jar full of pennies and dimes and nickels. I think I had $58 worth. And I walked up and said, "Mr. Lewis, this is for your kids." And that was before the telethon was even national. And he said, and he looked up and he goes, "What's your name?" And I said, "Tony Orlando." And I gave him the little that I know that years later, 1983, he comes to my dressing room in Vegas and he said, "Tony, I want you to host the New York telethon for me with me and Sammy and Ed McMahon."
Wow.
Well, that was a dream come true, and working with him for 33 years was something. And it was Jackie Gleason was a highlight because I think everybody, loved the great one and enjoyed him. And it was awesome to be on the same comedy stage and sing a duet with him on my first variety show. He was my first guest. And so, yeah, I've been privileged to work with Lucy and Sammy Davis and Frank Sinatra. What a glorious time in show business that I was part of. A part of show business that I don't think exists anymore, but will never be forgotten.
I tell you, so tell me something. Did you ever get starstruck when you were there doing the variety show and you had all these fantastic, talented artists on your show?
I'm still starstruck. I still ask for autographs. I still am in awe of people that I either grew up and loved or even some of the young performers today. I have this admiration for them. So, I can be honest with you. I've never lost the starstruck aspect of show business. I'm a fan of show business and theater and movies. And, it's been like the work Broadway. My first time on Broadway was in a show called Barnum. And I was able to work on Broadway. I mean, that's crazy to think that I did a Broadway show, two of them.
I know.
Smokey Joe's Cafe as well. And in Barnum, I had to walk the tightrope and sing at the same time. So, these things that's happened to me in retrospect, when I look back on them, I think this is only God's hand on me. This has been a blessing. There's no way I should have been able to work for 9 presidents and walk the tightrope on Broadway and sell 75 million records and have a television. It's just God just taking care of me, and I'm forever grateful.
Well, we're forever grateful to have you on the show. I want to go over some of the songs really quick. And there's so many. I'd be spending 40 minutes doing this, but let's take some of the real big ones. Obviously, Candida was one of the real big ones. And, of course, Knock Three Times and He Don't Love You Like I Do. And there's a dozen others. But I want to basically focus on one that really touches the heart of every American, especially if you're a military, former military like myself. And, of course, that would be Tie a Yellow Ribbon. We all know that song. In fact, I spoke to my daughter, told him I was interviewing you, and she knew that song. And she's a millennium. She's a millennial. So she knew the song, and she knew it well. And she loved the lyrics. What was that like?
Yeah. Your daughter's a rare one.
Yeah?
Your daughter's rare. She's very very up-to-date on things and knows her history. But, yeah, you're right. You know, in 1973, I recorded that song, and oddly enough, the first time, you're a veteran, so you'll appreciate this, I ever sang the song was I was invited by Bob Hope to go to the Cotton Bowl in 1973. And the song was only out a month or so, wasn't even a number one record yet. But he had the foresight to see that opening line, "I'm coming home, I've done my time," would be a perfect song to sing and open his show when he welcomed home the POWs from Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos. Now, that's 500-plus men who were tortured terribly in the Hanoi Hilton. So there we were at the Cotton Bowl with Bob Hope, the girls and I, and 70,000 people debuting the song, to be honest with you. And Bob said to me, you know, you're going to sing this song for the rest of your life, he said, because that's every mother's prayer for a soldier, is to say, I'm coming home, I've done my time. And since that day when I met those POWs, as a matter of fact, this year I'm reunioning with them again for the 54th straight year.
Wow.
Ever since that day. And I'll be doing that with them again in Palm Springs. I've never missed a year with them. And I have dedicated the career because of these brave men to make sure that I'm, you know, raising money for veterans. So because of Yellow Ribbon, and you'll appreciate this, as a veteran, that little song, and I was just the mailman that delivered the letter. The songwriters were L. Russell Brown and Irwin Levine. Because of the song they wrote, that song enabled me to raise over $100 million for veterans since 1973.
Well, I tell you, we thank you for that. It's a great song. In fact, even now, today, when I hear it, and I'm 65 years old, I still get a tear in my eye when I hear that song. It still gets to me. It's still an amazing song and just incredible that has touched so many lives.
Well, you know what's interesting about that song, too?
Yeah.
Forgive me for interrupting you.
No, that's okay.
You're so right. You're so right when you say it's touched so many people. Right now, right this minute, if you went to Jerusalem or Tel Aviv in honor of the hostages which are still being held, and also American hostages are being held by Hamas, there are yellow ribbons on every building, on every car, and they even turned the amber lights on the street lights. You have the green, the red, and then the amber is now a yellow ribbon in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv. Then if you go to Hong Kong, and they're on the street corners, and they're, you know, want to have democracy and not have China take them over, their logo is a yellow ribbon, and the song is their theme song in Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
And the same goes for 14 different countries aside from this great United States. So these guys wrote a song that has touched the world.
No, that's true. But you also sang it. It's how you sang it as well. I think that has a lot to do with how the impact of that song and how well it's achieved.
I tell them I was just a mailman that delivered the letter.
Oh, no, Tony, you were a lot more than that. But, you know, it doesn't stop there. You were on the board of directors for the Eisenhower Foundation, RA chairman of the Snowball Express, and you also, tell me about this Congressional Medal of Honor. You were host for that, for a dinner, for that. That's pretty impressive, too.
Well, yeah, that's part of the work I've done. You know, I started with Gary Sinise, and I started Snowball Express, which, of course, continues in his Gary Sinise Foundation. We started that at American Airlines a long time ago, then, and I don't know, about 18 years ago. Now, with the Medal of Honor recipients. There's a Medal of Honor recipient by the name of Gary Littrell, who started a foundation that I'm on the board also with. And this one's really amazing because we take the six core values that are lived by the Medal of Honor recipients, and, you know, those six core values are impressive. That's who they live by. We bring them to young children and students from college to grammar schools all over the country. We've already been to 75,000 young people. We go with Medal of Honor recipients. We share those six core values with them. And then we fly them on two C-130s, which is given to us by the Air Force. And we fly that maybe 175 students to NASA, and where we can inspire them into aeronautics and into space travel. And it changes their lives. And many of these are from underprivileged areas and poor parts of our country. So I'm very proud of my association with the Medal of Honor recipients, including Gary Littrell's new foundation called Tribute to Valor.
And that's fantastic. And you've done so much in service of our veterans, which is amazing. And you're right. The yellow ribbon is now, it's now universal. Everyone is, because anytime you're missing a person, any person, those yellow ribbons are all over the place. And you're right about what's happening now, unfortunately, in Gaza. That has occurred too as well. This is another thing. You wrote a memoir, Halfway to Paradise. What was that about?
Well, that's, that was a book that was written in the 90s. It came out, and it was about what happened up until then. I didn't realize that I would continue on in this business. So there's a new one to come, but it did very well. It was called Halfway to Paradise. The name of Halfway to Paradise is because I don't think you ever meet paradise in this business. I think it's a continuation of the dream. I mean, I don't think you ever reach it. You just keep trying to reach it until God takes you home. So the song Halfway to Paradise was written by Carole King, my first record. And it's just a composite of the blessings I've had and the relationships I've had with everybody in this business, starting with Don Kirshner, who was my first manager, up until the TV show, which we covered pretty well with you.
Okay. Well, listen, I tell you, I'm going to see if I can find it. I think it'll be fantastic to actually read that memoir. The stories you must be telling and all the things that have gone on is just absolutely amazing. Well, we got about 3 minutes before the last break, but I wanted to go over your entertaining. Now, obviously, you went solo, obviously, and you were playing Branson, you were playing Atlantic City, you were playing Las Vegas. You're a staple. Everyone knew where you were. You know, I've had people on that were actually out of Branson. In fact, my cousin, she's actually a performer. She was actually in MASH and a whole bunch of movies and so on. And she actually lives in Branson. I visited there. It's beautiful. It's a second Broadway, basically. What was Branson like? How did you like Branson?
Well, I still live in Branson. I don't think I'll ever, I think they'll bury me here because I've been here since 1993.
Uh-huh.
And I had a theater here from 1993 to 2000. I was doing 12 shows a week. That's two shows a day, 6 days a week from April to December. So your relative, it works hard in Branson, I'll tell you that. And it was 400 shows a year, so it was a tough time, but it was the most wonderful experience. And I love the area so much that I've never left it. I have a home in Las Vegas, but my primary home now is in Branson. And you're right, Branson has 140 theaters. It's an amazing place. There is no gaming here. It's all about the shows. It's all about the Ozarks. It's all about fishing and the lakes and etc. And it has still the primary, what I believe are the foundations that I love about this country. You know, we believe in God, family, and country, the great patriotism here. And this is where I started my work with veterans in 1993. And this is where I raised that money that I mentioned to you here by having free shows for veterans for all the years, the 25 years that I worked in Branson. I worked in Vegas up until last year, 54 straight years in Vegas. So I started in 71 at the Hilton Hotel, which is the same hotel Elvis worked in.
Uh-huh.
And I retired there just this last March at the South Point Hotel. So 54 years headlining in Las Vegas was a real proud time for me. So, yeah, the group broke up in 77. I had a terrible time dealing with Freddie Prinze's loss.
Yeah.
So we broke up at that time. And then I came back and worked, as you say, Vegas for the next 54 years, along with Atlantic City and, of course, Branson, Missouri, where I make my home.
Well, you don't have to sell me on Branson. I've been there. I've seen the shows. I've seen my cousin perform. She just loves it there. And obviously, it's a beautiful, there's nothing better. And I travel a lot because I have took a couple books out and I've done some television and radio on MSNBC, Fox News. And I tell you, when it comes to Christmas time, Branson, folks, I know we're Philadelphians and we have a great Christmas show here, a lot of stuff going on. But if you ever want to go for a really, really interesting, amazing, beautiful Christmas, go to Branson, Missouri during Christmas time, especially to their amusement park that they have there. Absolutely amazing. We'll be back.
Well, what's interesting you should say that is that our Veterans Day here,
okay,
November 11th, not only pays tribute to our veterans, and 100,000 veterans come to Branson every year.
Uh-huh.
Every year. That's amazing, actually. And they come to Branson, and that kicks off the Christmas season that you're talking about.
Yes.
So you're right. It's not only a patriotic time in November, but also the Christmas is awesome here.
It's absolutely awesome. Bring an overcoat, a scarf, and definitely a hat, because it does get a little cold, but it's great. We'll be back with Live on Tape right after these messages.
Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
Teachers shape the future. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who'll make preventing pandemics their life's work. Sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who'll help combat climate change. And generating possibilities for a student who'll be the first in their family to graduate college. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
And good afternoon, fellow Philadelphians. Pete Tribuco here, live on tape with Pete Tribuco on WWDB, AM 860 Talk Radio. Just wanted to mention, hey, listen, for those of you out there, introducing World Star Public Relations, where excellence meets exposure. And I mean it. Now, are you ready to elevate your brand in new heights? Well, their team of dynamic public relations experts is here to make your story shine bright on the global stage. Whether you're a startup, an established artist, business, or a rising star, they specialize in crafting narratives and captivate and campaigns that really do resonate. World Star PR. That's all you need to know. Your passport to the world of unparalleled visibility and success. So join the ranks of those who've already made headlines. Choose World Star Public Relations and let your story take center stage. That number is 631-506-6600, 631-506-6600. With us today, recording artist, singer, songwriter, music executive, actor, pretty much done everything. You might have seen him over the last 50, 60 years in Las Vegas or Atlantic City or Branson, Missouri. Tony Orlando, and we all know Tony Orlando and Dawn. Obviously, they're a hit series, their television show, 1974 to 77. Just so great to have you on, Tony.
Thank you.
Not a problem. I want to go over just a couple more things. We got a couple minutes. I want to go over...
Sure.
Just real quick, and I'm looking at my thing there. Okay, now this is like the ultimate. Here you are, 1990. All of a sudden, they tell you you're going to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, 6385
wow.
Hollywood Boulevard. What the heck was that like when you got the note and the news to do that?
as quick as I can tell you, of all the things I've ever experienced in terms of an award or anything, that was the one. Because I remember being in front of the Chinese Grauman Theater with my mom. I must have been, seven, 8 years old. And I saw those hands imprinted and the stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I said, Mom, Mommy, I'm going to have this someday. And she looked at me and she goes, I know you will, son. And my mother was there, able to experience that moment with me. So can you imagine what that was? A dream come true. And going back to that moment at seven, 8 years old, saying to my mother that I would have that star.
Wow.
And God has blessed me with it, really. And the people have blessed, because really the audiences is what we owe our thanks to. Without them, performers, we performers are nothing.
Well, I wouldn't go say that. I mean, you entertained a lot of people, and I tell you, I looked forward to your show, the Tony and Orlando and Dawn show.
Thank you.
To all those variety shows, Sonny and Cher, which of course is what you replaced actually the first time around. But they were great shows. I missed those variety shows. I loved all of them.
Actually, Cher went back on the air when we went on the air. She had gotten divorced with Sonny,
yeah,
and came back as the Cher show. People forget that there was a Cher show, because our show had such big numbers. CBS said, well, let's bring Cher back. And she again came back as a solo performer on television. People kind of forget that, because Sonny and Cher was so powerful. If it wasn't for Sonny and Cher, we wouldn't have Tony Orlando and Dawn show.
Really? Well, I think somehow you would have gotten there, because you were all so talented. The show was amazing.
Thank you.
You lasted several years. You know, you can always tell if a show is going to make it the first year. If they don't make it the first year, usually that's it. They're gone. You never hear from again. So if you get a second and third and fourth year, that's just absolutely incredible.
Well, one of the reasons why you say the number is 2 years is because at the end of the second year, the Tony Orlando Dawn Show changed its name to the Rainbow Hour.
Okay.
Why, to this day, I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows why? But
well, they changed us. They changed our night to go against Happy Days. They thought we could beat Happy Days. Well, nobody could beat that phenomenon. They had a 70% of America watched Happy Days at that time.
Oh, yeah.
And they thought CBS that we'd be able to combat it, and we never did. So they changed the name to the Rainbow Hour, and I guess they thought it was being clever.
Well, whatever it was still very interesting and a very great show. And I tell you, we've talked about a lot of different things here. It's been a real big experience for me. Now, I know we asked this question earlier, but I want to say it again for those that missed out. My Philadelphian friends out there, especially those that want to get in the show business, and I've had a lot of big stars on the show, and I always ask this same question, okay, because they want to get there. They want to be you. They want to be you, Tony. They want to get to your level. What advice can you give our youth about getting to your level?
Well, I think it's product first. I think you have to not worry about becoming a star, or not worry about making money. It's the art. Go in and make great music or make a great acting performance without the expectation of becoming a hit or becoming a star. Make the product work. Make the show great. Make the record great. Write the great songs and keep doing it. And don't think that there's ever a time slot. There is no time slot. It's just a matter of persevering and working hard. And don't forget the Lord. Pray. Keep him in your corner, because you can't do it alone.
Well, that's good advice. That definitely is good advice. Now, you have a website, right? I'm assuming.
I do, yeah.
Can you tell us what that
my
is?
My daughter, Jenny Rose, my daughter handles all my, media, everything to do with the internet. So she's in charge of it. And we have a wonderful Instagram and Facebook,
yeah,
and of course, TonyOrlando.com.
That's right. www.TonyOrlando.com. Go to it. It's a great site. And of course, you're all over the place. You're social media wise, you're all over the place. So, Tony, thank you so much. You have been an amazing guest.
Please let me thank you, because people, you do these shows all the time, but you are an artist at what you do. You are terrific. And you made this very easy. And and wonderful for me. And I want to let your audience know that you're a rare breed these days.
Well, thank you so much. But I'm only as good as the guest, and the guest was fabulous. And I'm in awe of everything you've done. I can't wait to see you, because I know we're going to be going to Carnegie Hall in December. Can't wait to meet you there. So
I'll see you there for Randy Edelman. Yes, sir.
Sounds good. Have a great night. And that about wraps it up for Live on Tape on this Saturday afternoon. And we'll talk to you again next week.